Come on, dude. Scott is going to go on Reverb right after this and buy an MTD, Justin. Just wait. Scott and I are sitting here today with Justin Raines, who is a three-time Grammy Award-winning bassist. He's also a private bass and drum instructor, founder of J. Raines Lessons. You know him as the bassist for Israel Houghton and New Breed. He is a beast of a bass player, and he's with us today to break down some of his classic bass lines and hopefully, like, just let me in on a piece of that ferocious technique. Justin, man, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. This is an honor. This is definitely an honor, so thank you.
Oh, dude, it's our honor. Obviously, you know, so many of you will already know that Justin is like a gospel legend. But if you don't already know and you haven't seen Justin in action, what we thought would be cool to kick off this conversation and this video with is actually Justin playing a performance that we've got right here. And it's a medley of Israel and New Breed, and it's just absolutely blazing. Hold on to your socks because they're about to get blown off. Check this out. I've got a bunch of questions about this bass as well, Justin. I want to know the kind of, you know,
how you got answers.
Your playing is so even too, like between the thumb stuff and the finger stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's important to me, to be able to go from a balance between the thumb and finger style. Explain that in a minute. I love mimicking the melody of everything else.
Yeah.
And how to get to my playing.
Hey! Oh! Good Lord.
Blazing.
It's outrageous, man. I mean, there's so many questions. I'm going to jump in first. When you're playing that on YouTube, are you doing, are you treating it any differently than you would live? And I guess I just would love to know the balance between like when you decide to step out and really play busy with a lot of fills versus playing super back pocket supportive, like what do you feel determines the balance of that for you?
You know, I try to stay as transparent as possible to like YouTube or social media as I would live.
Yeah.
You know, So playing live, it really depends on the energy on stage. You know, most of the time playing with Israel, he's a musician. So he appreciates little things here and there. You know what I mean? And the one thing about playing with Israel and even some other gospel artists is that a lot of the licks become a part of the song.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So they're not just random drum licks or random bass licks, but they're actual parts. You know, that they listen for to kind of go to like the next section or to kind of determine how many times we've gone around in the same section.
Like it signals a transition.
Exactly.
That unison line that you play with the keys and guitar, everything locks, moves into something else. Yeah.
Exactly. And then there's the element of it's social media, you know, people, they want the flash. So, you know, so on some parts, like there's some recent videos that I've put up where I purposefully just played busy, you know, because that's what people want to see, you know.
Sure.
And then I have some where I remove the bass and I'm actually playing the actual part, you know, where I give you the example of me actually playing, you know, so as the energy builds within the song, then I might add a little bit more. If I'm playing along with the verse, then I'm, you know, kind of just laid back and kind of playing the bass line, depending on whatever it is.
And those lines, Justin, that, you know, that everybody just watched you play on that track, what's the, if there was a pie chart of like, obviously the baseline is the baseline, right? But a lot of those, like, you're basically, from what I can see, you're unleashing the beast, right? Like, how much of that is improvised and how much of that is, like, you know, fast runs of transitions between chords? If there was a pie chart, what would that look like?
If it was a pie chart, I'd say 50-50, to be honest.
50-50.
Yeah, about 50-50, yeah. You know, because the main bass part is probably extremely simple. So, like, if we took, like, Rejoice is very simple. Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. That's the song.
It's like four chords, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, or the vamp of Lord, you are good. You are good all the time. All the time. You are good. That's it.
Got it. Yeah, right.
No, so the bass line is fairly simple. So everything else, I'm listening to what the keyboard is doing, the guitar is doing, the vocals are doing. And me and the drummer, we're pretty much super locked to kind of help the transitions along, if you will.
Could you show us levels of, like, if you take that vamp for You Are Good, doom, 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 like, what's the first level of putting something else on it? What's the second level? Like, how would you build something like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, great question, man.
Let's see.
Just like that.
Oh, come on, it's not done.
And goes from there.
You know, and so cool to just hear you do that out of context right now, because the thing that doesn't get sacrificed is the pocket. Right? Like, even when you're busy, right, those syncopations are tight, you're feeling quarter note through all that stuff.
Exactly.
Which
absolutely
is, I don't know, right? That's what makes busier playing work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I grew up in church, so I heard, you know, stay in the pocket since I was 10, you know,
right.
stay in the pocket. And for the longest time,
pocket?
Right.
Whose pocket
am I staying? I didn't understand what that meant. I thought it meant play simple. That's what I thought the pocket meant. And as I got older, I'm like, well, there's a pocket in every genre.
Yeah.
You know, there's a pocket in fusion. There's a pocket in R&B. There's a pocket in gospel. The pocket, I look at it as the feel. You know what I mean? To make feels good and locked into that feel. If it's playing simple, then that's what the pocket is. You know, there's some pockets where it's seemingly busy, but like you said, Ian, you can still feel the groove.
Absolutely.
Even within the notes and the syncopations.
Super. Yes, you can.
Can we just jump into the gear for a second? Because I know, just, you know, I'm just super into it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been watching you play this bass that you're playing, or, you know, different versions of that bass for so many years now. But going right back, it wasn't that bass. It was actually your six string walnut top MTD with a maple board. That was the first bass that I saw you play. And it was like back in the day here in Leeds, actually. And everybody was like texting that clip to each other. Yes, that bass. Everybody was like, whoa, like, check out this guy playing this bass. And it was you playing, I think it was like a sound check for Israel. Mm-hmm. I think that it's still on YouTube. And, you know, we were all texting it to each other. It sounded outrageous. You sounded outrageous. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, talk about the start of your relationship with Michael Tobias.
Sure.
And I'd love to know about that. But then also, like, your transition from playing that bass with the soap bars to the bass that you play now, which is much more like it's jazz pickups. It's jazz bass pickups, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you could talk about that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. So before I went to college, I played like a Yamaha BBG passive, you know, five string bass.
Yeah.
And my mom bought it for me because I liked it because it was blue and it had black stripes and it had fake gold hardware.
Yeah, cool.
I knew nothing about pickups and wood combinations and nothing about that. I just liked the way it looked. And once I got to college, I said, okay, it's time for me to get a bass. I need to learn more about what a bass is. And
yeah.
And then I met Andrew Goucher. I met Andrew Goucher and my late brother, Tim Robbiz Williams. And they were MTD all the way. I'm like, what is this bass? What is this bass? And while in college, me and Tim were in college, I used to play his MTD all the time. And I got my refund check from school. And I bought my first six-string MTD, which isn't this one. It looks similar. It was a walnut top, but it had a rosewood fingerboard. And I bought it because I liked the way it looked. Again,
I was the same, man. I was the same.
We're still the same. We just don't admit it, you know. As much right. as you get older, you still buy basses because they're cool, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I looked up because the sound was incredible. Sound engineers loved it. Recording engineers loved it. They're like, I don't have to put anything on this bass. I just plug it in and play it. And I remember taking the bass out of the box. I was so excited at school, and I just let it just kind of fall into my hand. I said, oh, this is comfortable. It just felt comfortable to play. It's very transparent, very, very transparent. Whatever you play, that's what's coming out of the bass.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's kind of how I fell in love with it. And, you know, for years, I just played six string bass. I knew that I wanted a five string. So I even looked around. I looked at Pavel. I looked at Aliva Coppola. I looked at Fender. And I said, what am I doing? Mike Tobias is like one of the greatest luthiers ever. So I reached out to Mike. I said, hey, I'm looking for like a five-string jazz style version. And it was around the time that he was just starting to release the Saratoga line. And
it was kind of like serendipitous that those two things linked together. Yeah,
absolutely. And he sent it to me. And I took it to church that night and I said, this thing feels amazing. It's light. It was like 8 pounds. It's light and it's powerful. This thing, it's powerful. It's got so many tone options on it. And I played that for about four or five years. I recorded the Alive in Asia album with it. I recorded a few albums with William McDowell with it. After that, people started requesting it. People started asking, like, I want the Justin Raines, you know, bass. Yeah. And I remember Norm Stockton pulled me to the side and he said, if you can make this bass your signature bass, what would you do different? Mm. And I said, if I could have the tone kind of a little bit more controlled, and it's a little bit more punch on the high end. I love the low end in that it doesn't get away from you. It punches you right in the face, you know, in true MTD fashion. It's very transparent in the mid range. You know what I mean? It's not overbearing. Yeah. It's right there. And I want it to be flat. Like I want as many tone options as possible, because here at home on Mondays, I play jazz and play fusion, you know, and then in the studio, I can play rock. I can play R&B. I can play pop. I can on the road. I'm playing R&B and gospel. Yeah. And so I want as many tone options as possible. So, well, me and Daniel and Mike kind of came up with this one. So we put a top on what was already done with the original Saratoga. So we put the quilted maple top on here and we put in B-axis pickups. In the original one, it was just, you know, Jay Bartolini pickups. And it was actually an accident because Mike sent the Jay bass pickups, but there was like a malfunction with them and they were like kind of like reversed. I don't understand it, but I sent it back to Mike and Mike was like, well, I have these B-axis pickups that Bartolini just kind of released. I think you'll like them. I said, hey, I trust you. I've been with you for years. I trust you. Man, I pulled it out the box and started playing. I said, that's it.
Amazing.
That's
Justin,
it,
will you plug that thing back in and just show us, like, when you plug your bass in, what are you doing right away to the knobs? Show us, like, how you get your sound. Is it all flat? Are you boosting bass? Are you favoring neck pickup? Like, what's your go-to with the knobs?
Sure. So when I first plug in my bass, and let me just go ahead and show you here what everything is.
Look at that thing.
So this is my volume here. Volume is right here. This is just a passive inactive. Right now it's active. Up is passive.
Okay.
So this is my blend between the two pickups. Blend knob. I typically keep that right in the middle unless I'm getting ready to solo jazz and I'll I'll favor my rig pickup. Yeah. The stack here is low and high, and that's typically flat right in the middle.
Yeah.
This is my mids. Now, it's a push-pull, so when it's down, it's activating 400 hertz. When it's pulled out, it's 800 hertz, and I can cut or boost those mids. I typically keep that around 400, and this is, I call it the sweetness knob, but it's my tone knob.
The secret sweetness knob.
It's the secret sweetness knob.
Yeah.
And it's just the tone knob. So it's the active passive tone. So my bass is passive, the only thing that's activating it tone wise is the tone knob. So like a darker sound to a little bit more of a brighter, you know, tone. And whenever it's active, it does the same thing to the onboard EQ. I can darken the EQ or I can brighten it up. That's why I call it the sweetness knob.
Where do you usually have that set? I mean, or does it depend on the gig and the music?
It typically depends on the gig or the music, but at my everyday, I'll have it pretty much wide open.
Yeah.
And so like right now, everything is flat.
Oh, it's cool.
It is a great sounding bass.
Now, what I typically do is everything is usually flat, and then I'm going to show you. I'll boost my mids that much.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And the same thing with the bass.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit.
And do you find that just helps you cut through in the mix more?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Man, congrats on that bass. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
We got to talk about some slapping. I mean, you got this ferocious technique, right? I mean, we need to, I've seen you do some double thumb. You're putting it in. I mentioned earlier that you have this incredible, like, evenness between your finger sound and your slap sound. So we got to get into it.
There's plenty of slappage going on in here. Check this out.
Hey. And is that the same bass, Justin?
Yes, it is.
It's great as well. The tone of the bass, like finger style, it doesn't, when you start slapping it, it's not one of them basses that you've got to alter the EQ at all when you go from finger style to slap. It just works both. Yeah.
So me and my friends, we have this thing called a tone check.
tone check
is when you go from finger style to slap.
To slap.
Right? Yeah. And it's even. So that's the, if your bass doesn't pass the tone check, throw it away.
Yeah. It's a serious thing though, isn't it? So it just doesn't work on some basses.
Yeah.
But also, let's not take agency away from you, man. I mean, you know, you give that to somebody else, maybe they're not passing the tone check. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hey. Facts.
Come on, dude. Scott is going to go on Reverb right after this and buy an MTD, Justin. Just wait.
Outrageous, mate. Outrageous. Let me stop it there. I just can't take anymore. Sorry. I'm out. See ya.
That's a mic drop. Man, I mean, you know, yeah, we're talking about the bass, and obviously, you know, you're mentioning the bass has to pass the tone check, and like, does it slap? Does it play finger style? Does it feel even? But that's also you. So can you talk to, like, if someone comes to you and is like, oh man, you know, how do I get that even thing? Do you have any exercises or just pointers for how to like cultivate that evenness between those two techniques?
Absolutely. You know, as a teacher, like I'm always kind of paying attention to that right hand, you know what I mean? The right hand technique. I think getting a nice even tone, just finger style, You know, not even worrying about slap just yet, but just getting a nice even tone by how you, like how I play, you know, is pretty much this kind of this, I say you want to land on the string below it. So if I'm playing my A string, you're landing on the E string.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So you're not going under, you're not going away. You're just kind of gliding into the next string. And that's how I teach my students. Now, when it comes to slapping, I was always taught from my OGs growing up, you know, you slap right here. You slap in between this. I don't know what the significance was. I just thought that it was because my thumb actually hit the board.
Yeah, right.
Got it. Yeah.
So what I teach my students today is just accuracy and making sure you're getting a nice tone whenever you're playing. So if that's how it sounds when I slap, whenever I pluck, I should have the same volume. And so one exercise would probably be, let's just say like a major scale, you know? Same thing, slap.
So you're trying to get that same evenness and
same velocity. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
And now when it comes to the thumb, of course, people out there, students, bass players, you're going to have to take time in being accurate. You know, because if it sounds like that, then you know,
right?
Is
yeah,
you kind of defeating the purpose. But the things that you do finger style, try it slapping. You know what I mean? Even if it's a pentatonic scale. Mm. You know, what I mean? you want to match the two. So that means you have to be kind of conscious of how you play your finger style. And you know, when it comes to slap, you can't just,
right.
You know?
Yeah. You have a really nice, like measured, you're not smashing the bass. You don't have to. And it looks to me too, like you're going through the string, right? You're landing on the adjacent string with your thumb.
I am. Yeah. So if I'm slapping my E, I'm landing on the A string.
Yep.
You know, if I'm slapping my A, I'm landing on the D string. But that's typically how I kind of work between my finger style and my slap. It's a disciplined mindset of practice. You know what I mean? Really making sure that this matches that. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go from here, I don't do that. I just make sure they match each other.
Are you using a lot of up thumbs as well? Like when you're doing that?
So. Now the double thumb, I really got into it from Ethan Farmer, you know, and Eric Pickfunk Smith, Damo Farmer, DOA, they all call it greasing. You know, they call it greasing. It's the funk, but introduced to it by Victor, you know, and it's just the double thumb technique. I think for me, before I got comfortable with it, I just sat at home for like a year and making sure that my down thumb and my up thumb matched. That I had control over it timing wise. And I remember the main place I used it was in church, you know, because we're playing what we call shout music.
Wow, cool, man. Yes.
That was the main place that I used it. And then, like I said, like watching Ethan Farmer, he would start, you know.
Yes, man.
You know,
I've seen Ethan and yourself, Justin, as well, when you're doing that. I've seen you both do it like, you know, around here on the bass, but I've also seen you do it like right back here.
Yeah. Now that's the greasing part. That's because when it becomes muted, I'm trying to see if I can sit up.
Yeah, so can you demonstrate that?
I'm gonna take my bracelets.
Oh, it's getting serious now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now.
So it's palm mute combined with double thumb. Right.
So like, it becomes so that good. Like the funk is the notes that you don't hear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
where,
it's
that's
the
where
sort
the funk
of like rhythmical
comes
element
in.
Of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does like, cause obviously, well, not obviously some people, a lot of people might not know, but you're also like a monstrous drummer as well. Does that like, how does that, you know, affect the way that you play your relationship with the bass, mm-hmm. you know, like slapping's a really percussive, you know, way to play the instrument. How do you think that that's influenced how you play the bass?
A lot. I think it, a lot.
A lot.
It influences the way that I play rhythmically. I don't think that I would be as rhythmic as I am without, you know, being the drummer that I am. And that's not to say that you have to be a drummer to be that rhythmic. But, you know, the way that I play drums is the way that I play bass, and understanding the syncopations, thinking about the one-e-anda while I'm playing, you know, feeling the one-e-anda when I'm playing, you know, or if I'm playing along with the drummer, I'm paying attention to, I know what they're doing. I know I'm paying attention to the ghost notes on the snare. I'm paying attention to their drum fills. So I'll probably match their drum fills with my bass line, you know, or of course, you know, the groove. But I'm very conscious because I play drums. It's that same mindset when it comes to rhythm on the bass, you know.
Hey, Ian, have you heard Justin play drums?
No, I haven't actually. Is it ferocious?
It's ferocious.
What? I don't doubt that.
It's ferocious. I was like, I can remember like the first time I was like, it was too much. Watching Justin playing the bass is too much, and then I saw him playing drums. I was like, "Damn it!" Outrageous, outrageous.
Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, just too, about worship bass playing. And you know, I have played my fair share of worship music, but not in like gospel style, more in like CCM pop style. I've played You Are Good a million times, but I have never played it or have been asked to play it. Thank goodness, like you, because it wouldn't happen, right? But there, it seems like there's two styles, right? And the style of church that I came up in was all about avoidance of distraction. Mm-hmm. And maybe you get asked this a lot. Whereas then when I see you play, you're not thinking about distraction maybe in the same way, or you're not thinking about like drawing attention in the same way. And I gotta say, man, when I look over on that side of the playing, I'm like, man, like Sharon and I were even talking about this. Like, why didn't we get to do that? You know, our worship leader was like,
no. It seemed like way more fun. Yeah,
man, it's way more fun. Absolutely. And so I was just wondering if you could speak to that kind of that dichotomy of like, when do you feel like you're stealing the thunder? Or when do you feel like it's a celebration?
Sure. I do get this question a lot because there is the stereotype of some bass players that grew up in the Black church experience where they're just busy, you know, I can't hire them for anything else because they're just busy. It's undisciplined. Whereas in some cases, though, it can be a distraction, you know what I mean? But there's a fine line between distraction and freedom. You know what I mean? To kind of having the freedom to be expressive on your instrument, but without being a distraction. For this answer, I kind of like separate the two, gospel, CCM. CCM, whole notes, quarter notes.
Yes.
Four chords. You know, pretty much it. Growing up in the gospel where I grew up, it was more jazz driven, you know, a lot more chord changes, a lot more movement, but you still didn't get in the way of the message. Hmm. You know what I mean? We're going to give the band, you know, their opportunity to, you know, express themselves. But also, as the song intensifies, the song grows, you know, the tension kind of builds. It leans or it lends to adding a little bit more. You know, sometimes the movement of the bass or the movement of the keys or the licks of the drums help build the song up. Everything's building. It's a it, it it's telling a story. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a climax. Yeah, yeah. And to get to that climax, sometimes it's going to be a certain baseline, you know, or run that leads somewhere.
Yes.
It can't just be this random baseline that you, you know, I practice this lick at home and it's going to hit, you know.
Right.
And then you do it and it's like, wonk, wonk. You know, so it's one of those things where you kind of have to be in the moment, you know, and not be a distraction, if you will.
Do you feel like this, you know, distraction versus expression thing comes down to listening? Like for you, it seems like you're responding. Like I'm never hearing you think like, oh, I can't wait to the end of this four bars where I get to do this thing. Like I can't wait to the end of the eight bars where I get to break out the thumb. It's almost as if you're responding to the energy of the tune, to the drummer, to the other musicians versus like leading the way because you have licks to play. Mm. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I matured to that point, you know, just like any young musician, you know, when I was younger, you know, it was, I got these licks and I got, you know, and I just want to, I mean, I used to play so many chords on my six string. I couldn't wait to play open note chords. I couldn't wait to play them. I couldn't wait. Oh, we playing an A minor? We playing an E minor? B minor? I couldn't wait. Like, there's chords
like,
everywhere.
To show people that you know, like, oh, I can play this on my bass. Check it out. I can play chords.
Oh, my goodness. And and I remember, like, some of the older guys, they're like, hey, man, that sounds all good, but do it down here. Do it in the bass room. Do it down there. Yeah. You know? And I'd be mad. I'm like, what you mean? I'm playing bass. What you mean? You know? But as I get older, you know, it is a response. A lot of my lines, I'll check what the vocalist is doing or what the horns or strings or guitar or keyboard player is doing. It's a response to kind of stay within the vein of the song. Yeah. One thing I tell my students, I says, whatever you play, you want it to complement the song. You want it to build or add value to the song. The minute it becomes something that distracts or takes away or puts the attention just solely on you, you probably shouldn't have played that in that particular moment. But if it's something that adds value or it's something that's uplifting the tune, then sure. You know what I mean? So that's where I think that line comes in between freedom of expression and then also being a distraction.
Hey, can we play that clip, Scott, of Justin playing with Neo doing that bass solo? You get to see audience side, like it's shooting out on the stage. It's such a fun perspective. And to see you surrounded by all those synths, I want to talk about that in a minute,
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
But we've got this cool clip of you taking a bass solo with this artist, Neo.
Check this out. It's amazing.
Oh, dude. Come on.
It's my favorite lick.
Oh, nice.
Hey. Come on, dude. It's such a fun combo, Justin, like stepping out, but also so pocketed. And dude, because it's so pocketed, you can flash because everything is locking in. It just sounds like it's part of the drums in a cool way, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to have like, man, they're so lucky to have you, right? Because you have to have the facility, the gas in the tank, the horsepower, right? So that, you know, okay, it's cool. You're driving 25 miles an hour, but when you need to get to 100, you can.
Yeah.
Like this. Yeah. And it's so fun to see that. Like, man, I love it.
Man,
well, I don't even have a question. I just want to heap praise on you, man.
I've got a question. Talking about that, like, raw horsepower in the tank, it's obviously, you know, we've been watching a bunch of clips of you just then. Mm-hmm. You've obviously got a lot of horsepower in the tank. Can you talk about some of the technique exercises that you've used in the past to build that, you know, build that ability?
Absolutely. I love that analogy. It kind of gives me one of the quotes from my music teacher in middle school. He used to say, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And he was talking about a pencil. He was like, make sure you bring your pencil to class. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he used to say that all the time. And I remember I said to somebody, man, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. I said, oh, shoot. It's come full circle.
You've become the teacher.
Right. I've become the teacher. But to your question, yes. Yeah, so some exercises as far as just kind of the locking and in the rhythm, it's very important to me that I practice with a metronome or practice with a drum loop, something that keeps me accountable to my licks or my runs or my lines, if you will. Let's take like a simple pentatonic, major pentatonic exercise.
Yeah.
Instead of doing, you know, something like that, I would do it in, what did I say, like four notes at a time. But everything has to be in time. So. Go up.
Super even as well, yeah.
But everything has to have a pulse. So you see, even when I'm playing,
you're locked in, yeah.
Right.
Let's take that groove to Nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect exercise that I would do all the time, is that I would pick a groove and then I would pick a little section where I can actually just solo. So
got one, like a little fill off. Yeah, something four. Like that, yeah.
So even if yes. I mess up, even if I mess up, I have to come back on the one.
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so even if I'm playing.
To your earlier point, you're trying to stick in the pocket. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to stick in the pocket when it comes to the rhythmic side. Now, when it comes to the sound of harmony, practicing certain licks in the clip, I was like, oh, this is my favorite lick.
Yeah.
So I would practice that. Cool. It's now on the theory side. It's very simple. It's a minor seven arpeggio, but I'm playing a fifth to each one of the notes in the minor seven arpeggio. So
yeah.
It's an E flat minor seven arpeggio, E flat, G flat, B flat, D flat, but I'm playing a fifth to each one.
That's great. Yeah.
And to make it more interesting, doubling it.
You get those cool extensions. Yeah,
exactly.
But man, nobody would care. No one would care about that lick or the harmony if it weren't pocketed. No one.
Exactly.
It would sound like lame if it wasn't pocketed, and no one would be like, oh, listen to that amazing harmony. It'd be like, ooh, that wasn't pocketed. I feel like bass players don't think that they have the fill requirements of a drummer. Like if a drummer played, it would have to be lockstep even for it to work. And I think that's the same with bass.
I'm so glad that you're expressing that, because it's important. Now, one thing that I would practice and still do to this day, I don't want my licks to rush. I don't want my licks to be sloppy. I want everything to be clean. For anybody that's out there that's intimidated by theory, the licks that you already know how to play, slow it down, put a metronome to it. You know what I mean? Challenge yourself for everything to be clean. And as my good friend Derek Bennett says, clean, clear, and precise. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Make sure shout that everything Derek that Bennett. You play, shout out Derek, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that it's clean, clear, and precise, and that you have control. So many people are like worried about speed, but be in control of what you're playing. You know what I mean? When you have that control, you're unstoppable. You know what I mean? You're unstoppable based on what you want to play. Growing up playing drums, we had drum sheds. And, you know, in the drum shed, it's like, all right, I take four bars, you take four bars, you take four bars. And then after a while, it's like, all right, keep going. So after four bars, play over the bar line. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going. Even if you keep repeating yourself, keep going, keep going, keep going. So after a while, you're like playing the same thing. You're like, I don't know what else to play. No, just keep going. Just keep trying things. That became a part of my practice on the bass. So if I'm playing, so if I have a something right here. All right, we're gonna change the keys to G minor. Back to E minor. And just keep going.
Got it. Yeah.
You know,
just and keep going and keep going, and making sure that you can
Oh, that's like, so cool.
Yeah.
And it's to your level. To your level. Some people may watch and be like, well, I can't do that. That's years and years of practice. Absolutely. But to wherever you are, just keep going. Explore the instrument. You know what I mean? Some people get locked into just technique, which is important. We want to have the technique that they kind of step away from the imagination or the creative part. You know what I mean? Like, just try things. Mess up. I mean, mess up.
Yeah, give yourself the room to do that.
And then find your way back so that in the field, in real life, playing a gig, I can recover a lot easier.
I can just imagine what everybody watching right now is thinking when they saw you do, you know, the... You know, like you, blah, 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 all of the things. Like they will be probably thinking, well, what are you using to do that? Like, what's making up all of those notes? Are you thinking pentatonics? Are you thinking scales? Like what's going through your mind?
Absolutely.
If anything, or are you just like, what's going on?
Absolutely. So a big part of my playing is foundation. It's foundational. I've taken the time to practice all of my scales and. For the sake of this, I'll say like my major scales, my minor scales, my modes, pentatonic scales, blues scales, melodic minor scales, these particular scales, I've taken the time to learn them all over my neck, every key, you know? So if I'm taking the key of G major, these are all the notes that are in the key of G that I'm comfortable on my bass.
Got it. And are you pattern orientated, Justin, as well? Have you sort of like broken up? Are you visually, have you learned the scales in terms of like visualizing the fingerboard, or is it more notes and intervals that you're thinking?
It's both. So
right, got it.
I learned theory before picking up an instrument. So in school, we learned music theory just as you would learn math and social studies and stuff like that.
Wow.
So we're looking at sheet music and they're like, okay, how many sharps or flats are in the key of A? Three. What are those sharps? Yeah. F sharp, C sharp, G sharp. You know, these were like, that's how theory was taught to me in middle school. I didn't really take advantage of
it. We had different schooling experiences.
Same. Yeah. I think it was more like you, Scott.
But that kind of stuck with me. So fast forward. So when it comes to kind of my fretboard, if I'm in like, okay, I'm in the key of G, I know there's only one sharp in the key of G. So I know what my notes are. G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G. I know that. So how do I translate that to the bass? that's where the kind of shapes come in, you know. That's what that shape kind of looks like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because our instrument is pattern based, then we have that way, you know, or yeah. we have that way, or that way, or
yeah,
or that way. You know what I mean? So we have so many ways of playing the same thing. And as far as really, really understanding the neck of the bass, I always encourage students or people to always play multiple octave scales, not just one. You know, if you learn one octave, okay, learn it. What's in it? G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, G, A flat, B flat, C, D flat, E flat, F, G, A flat, whatever is in that particular scale. Learn those notes. You know, that's in it, because it's going to repeat itself as you get higher, as you keep going. Okay, if you number system, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, or 8 octaves, you know, however you have to think about it.
Yeah.
And learn that foundation and then extend it. So
oh man, do you know when you play, you've got this vibe that Richard Bonner has got as well, where it just feels like fluid water flowing over rocks. Oh. When you play sort of like it's just glorious.
That just
it's
makes just like, me. That, you know how
love it.
Like you know how like I'm really like jumping on the inside right now, trying to hold my composure because Richard Bonner changed my life.
Oh, dude, yeah.
I'm telling you a quick story. Rest in peace, John Blackwell. When I was at Berkeley, John Blackwell came to the school, and it was like percussion week at Berkeley. And I never seen Richard Bonner. I was probably introduced to his playing maybe like a week before. I was listening to a Greg Howe album. It was Greg Howe, Richard Bonner, and Dennis Chambers.
Yeah, dude.
I said, oh my goodness, I don't know who this bass player is, but good Lord. And so fast forward, it's percussion week. John Blackwell's in town. And he's like, hey, Mike Stern is coming to do a concert. Dennis Chambers is playing with him. I said, I'm there because I'm a drummer. And I want to see Dennis Chambers.
Yeah.
So it was at a jazz club called Scullers in Boston. And there were two shows. There was an 8 o'clock and there was a 10 o'clock. Me and my friends, we got there. Me, John Blackwell, and all the drummers, we got there maybe like around 9:30. And this guy came out and he was like, man, that first show was incredible. I didn't have tickets. I was like, oh man, we needed tickets. He said, man, that first show was incredible. Who needs tickets? I was like, me, I need tickets. Closed mouths don't get fed. I need tickets. And he just gave me the tickets. And Scott, Ian, the tickets were right in front of the bass amp. Like I was sitting like how close my computer is to me.
Yeah.
That's how close Richard Bonner's bass amp was to me. Like I could touch the bass amp and,
amazing.
But I didn't care because I could see Dennis Chambers drum sets.
Sure. Yeah.
I can see his yellow pearl drum set. I'm just like, I can see Dennis. That's all I really care about.
Yeah, dude.
Now I'll tell you, I didn't know what Richard Bonner looked like and I didn't know that he was playing that night. So the band comes out, out comes this African guy. He's sitting right in front of me and there's a microphone at his bass amp. I'm like, okay, that's cool. All right. I can still see Dennis. Man, they start the show. I sat like this.
Right.
The entire night. That night, I became the biggest Richard Bonner fan ever. Afterwards, he was so nice. He was so nice to me. He let me play his bass. You know, we joked around, like laughed around. And I studied everything that I could by watching his technique, how he moved, how free he was.
Yeah.
How he just tried things. So that's kind of where I kind of get that mindset up. Just try things, you know, just kind of, you know, just, but and find your way back. You know what I mean? All that being said, you mentioning Richard Bonner and kind of making the comparison, that just made me excited.
Oh, dude, like it makes so much more sense now that like that feel is like ingrained in you. It's yeah. really obvious that, you know, it's just because it's, there's not many people have that particular feel within their playing of like water flowing over rocks when they're playing sort of like a complex line like that. And I think that you're one of the only people in the world that really have like that essence in their pocket, their feel when you're playing. It's just outrageous. Yeah, I absolutely love it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. There's a lot of vocabulary going on in this. There's a lot of information there from years of practicing and not even just, you know, the scale that kind of showed you. Everything that goes up has to come down. You know what I mean? And then in between that, you know, just the basics, you know, the arpeggios, be comfortable with those.
It's safe to say that you know your neck.
Yeah. This is a man that knows the fingerboard.
It, it reminds me of a conversation I had with, there was a great, I was in New York, I was like getting, grabbing some lessons out there, and I was having a conversation with this great guitar player called Brad Shepik. And I can remember, you know, you guys know, you mean like, remember when you sort of like, you think there's a shortcut and you're like, I'm going to meet this guy. He's going to tell me the shortcut.
The secret
he's
going to
tell me the shortcut. Yeah. And ultimately, the conversation went something like, so what you're telling me I need to do, so I need to know all of the modes. He's like, yeah, you need to know all of the modes. I was like, oh, okay. And I need to know them in all 12 keys. And he's like, he was kind of sort of like dumbfounded that I didn't already know this. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. So, okay, right. I'll just make a note of this. No shortcuts. You know, but I think it's actually really, it's really common for people to think there's some kind of like magical, special secret sauce that somebody has that gives you the ability to not do the work needed to be able to understand, you know, the neck. And obviously, you know, looking at you right now, Justin, you know the neck. You've done that work needed. Yeah, absolutely.
I've definitely done the work, and I share that with anybody. Some people overcomplicate it. You know, they overcomplicate theory. We have 26 letters in our alphabet. We only need to know 7 in the musical alphabet. You know, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. When we start to simplify the basics or the foundation, it makes it a little bit more palatable. Because some people, they'll go and pick up, I got to learn my theory. Let me go pick up the bass grimoire.
Oh, I have that.
I mean, it's brutal.
I have it too. But it's like, if you're not disciplined, it's like going on YouTube. If you're not disciplined on what you need to focus on, because there's so much information,
right?
It'll be overwhelming.
Right.
It'll be extremely over. You're like, hexa, penta, what is this?
Mongolian minor?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But it makes so much more sense when you realize that everything is birthed from the major scale.
Yes. Yeah, if the major scale is context for everything.
Yeah, it's context. Yeah. It's the foundation. Yeah. And if you can understand that, everything else will kind of slowly kind of help you out.
Well, awesome, Justin, dude. You're a man that knows your fingerboard, but you're also a man that knows your way around a keyboard. Yes. See what I'm doing here? A little seg. I wanna check out that key bass. Can we pull up that key bass video of Justin just crushing some key bass? Come on, dude, that slide. Oof. Getting the wobbles in. Okay. Oh, you're a killing keys bass player too. Jeez, dude.
It's outrageous.
So outrageous. Hey, when you're doing this, I mean, I feel like we could just start the interview over, and I want to talk to you for 2 hours about key bass, but we're not going to do that. I guess what I want to ask you is, when do you choose, like, when are you choosing key bass over e-bass?
There's a lot of different factors. So some of it is based on the producer.
Yeah.
Some of it's based on the musical director. If it's up to me, I typically base it off of what the genre feels like. If it's like, okay, this feels like a pop song that would like key bass, or this feels like a song that would be better on live bass. Sometimes I feel like I can be a little bit more aggressive on the live bass than synth bass, depending on the tune. Sometimes it's just trial and error. Sometimes it's like, okay, let me just try it here. Or it just feels like this has more of an R&B vibe to it. Mm. So it may need that smooth, vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And did you always play, like, have you played keys for a long time? Or was there any kind of like learning curve taking what you knew from bass to the key bass?
I always had a basic understanding of keys. I wouldn't consider myself like a piano player. I can play like licks with my right hand on a piano. But I try to approach key bass like a bass player, because there's a difference whenever a piano player approaches key bass versus a bass player approaches in key bass. Because there's a certain feel, like the way that we play octaves on key bass is going to be similar how we play octaves or fifths on our live bass. You know, the ghost notes that we would play on a live bass is the same ghost notes that I would approach on key bass, if you will. The same way that I was talking about, you know, whenever we want to do the tone check with our bass, and we want to make sure that whatever we play on our bass that we do with our thumb, I'm the same way on synth bass. I'm gonna practice those pentatonic scales in every key and try to find a fingering that works for me. It's not going to be perfect, but whatever works for me. In the heat of a song, because I want to be able to. If this is the tempo, I want it to be just as clean on synth bass as I would live bass. So that means I just had to do the work. You know, put on that metronome and try to figure out a way that, you know, that it works out for me.
Do you spend a lot of time still playing? Like, how much I think it's always interesting to ask people of your caliber. You know, there's... Mm-hmm. You're kind of the ceiling, dude. There's not much more that you can do. Do you know what I mean? So with that in mind, are you just chilling or do you play your bass every day? And keep, like, what are you doing every day?
I have to play. I have to. I love to play, you know. Yeah. Two, although I thank you for your kind words. To me, I still have a lot more to go. You know, there's so much more that I like to learn. There's so much more that I'd like to clean up. There's so much things I want to be better at doing for my own personal goals. I recognize the ability that I do have now. Absolutely. I recognize the hard work that I've put in and what I'm able to do. I know my strengths, but then I also know my weaknesses. And I don't want to do, I have a fear. I have a fear of doing my students a disservice, of being the teacher that can teach you all of these things, but can't do it.
Right. Sure.
I have this fear of that. So I'm like, I always want to make sure that I'm better tomorrow than I was yesterday. I want to be a better altogether. And that's just not as a musician. That's just as a person. I want to be a better, a better me today than I was yesterday. And I want to be better tomorrow than I am today.
Well, dude, let me just say that I think that you're such an inspiring individual. And I think that, you know, from Ian and I, but also the entire bass community, I just want to put it out there, just in case you do not know, that you have inspired freaking hundreds and hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of bass players around the world for the time that you've been doing it. Like, you really truly are an absolutely outstanding musician in every single way. And ever since that first time that I saw you, I was just so excited to see, you know, how you developed as a player, and you've just always been an inspiration to me. And I think I'm just like super, super excited about where you're going to take it. And yeah, just want to thank you for being, you know, the musician you are, and for being here today. Absolutely blown away, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you, both of you. Thank you.
Justin, can I ask you one more question?
Absolutely.
Man, there are a lot, there are going to be a lot of young bass players checking this out. And, you know, I just wonder if you have a piece of advice that you could give to a young Justin Raines. Mm-hmm. Like, so instead of thinking about, oh, what's the piece of advice that you want to give to all the young bass players? What's something that you wish you would have internalized early on that would have helped you in your journey?
Wow. Learn everything. Learn as much as possible. And when I say that, you know, me growing up, I was like the gospel encyclopedia. How we have jazz standards, I knew all of the gospel standards, you know, and I spent so much time there that I wish that I created and listened to more a lot earlier. I probably could have wrote my first album when I was in college, but I was just so focused on just being a player versus being more creative and looking in the producer and the artist and the writer realm, like, oh yeah, you can do it all. You can literally do it all. So like, don't close yourself off to just one genre or one option. Be open to just learn. Be an open book.
Yeah.
So that's definitely what I would say.
You heard it from this guy. He's going to tell you, Justin Raines, man, what a treat. Thank you so much. So generous with your time and your spirit. And thank you so much for being here today.
Where can people find you online, Justin?
Oh, you can find me on Instagram. It's J Raines, J-R-A-I-N-E-S, 112. That's Instagram. That's Facebook. YouTube is Justin Raines. And my website is jrainslessons.net.
Go check him out. Go stalk this man online. Thanks a lot, Justin. Take it easy, man. Bye.
Awesome. Take care.